Essex-based theatre group with a string of successes to their name, such as Trainspotting and Around the World in 80 Days, are back in action the week after next with their version of a 1930s comedy, which helped revive the career of one of Hollywood's best-loved actresses. And I'm joined now by one of the directors, Amy Clayton, along with half the cast, I think, from Early Doors Productions. Good morning to you guys.
Morning. Good morning.
Thanks for
normally
having
the
us.
Whole cast descends, and I don't mean descends, that sounds very negative, doesn't it? I mean, joins me, but it's probably because it's very early on a Saturday morning. We've just got a few of you this morning. We'll introduce yourselves in just a moment, but I'm keen to find out basically what the Philadelphia story is about. Now, what I've done in the past when you guys have been in is I've virtually sort of given away the whole plot of the thing, which I don't want to do. So I'm going to leave it to you. Justin, let's ask you. You're playing Mike, one of the one of the guys in the thing. What's the setting for the Philadelphia story? What's it about?
Well, the basic premise is that Tracy Lord is getting married, and her ex-husband turns up a couple of days before the wedding, and That's kind of the premise, and it's a love story there. And what follows is also the Mike, which is my character, who's a journalist, and Liz, which is played by Emma. They're undercover reporters trying to do an article about the Philadelphia story, about the life of these sociites.
So Tracy, the leading lady, what sort of a character is she? She's actually played by Amy, isn't she? One of the directors. Amy, do come in here.
Hello.
We've got all sorts of things going on in the studio this morning, which hopefully we're sounding completely seamless, but there's all sorts of panics going on in the background, but we won't go into that. Amy, you're normally sort of behind the scenes directing the whole thing. You don't often appear, certainly not in a leading role, but you are in this one. You are the main
right,
character.
That's right. What on earth am I doing, Alan? I know. I really wanted it. That is the trope. I really, really wanted the part.
Was it your idea to put on the film?
Actually, it was
story?
Justin's idea, yeah.
Right.
I mean, we loved the film, and we read the play, and with a few tweaks, it's so... Even though it is set in the 1939s, and yes, there's a true... Every now and then there's a reference to the time, but nothing detracting. It's not a dated piece. It's a love story. Everyone falls in love.
It's 80 years old. That's what I was saying in the introduction there. It's nearly a century ago. It's unbelievable. But describe the character you're playing, Tracy. What sort of a woman is she?
Oh, she's very un-me. Very high standards. Has a lot of expectations for people that they normally fall short on, unfortunately.
And, right.
This is all about her... discovering herself, and that not everybody can meet those expectations, and it's not a bad thing. She just needs to discover what people can bring to the table as opposed
to... So she was married?
She was married, absolutely.
But she's not happy enough with her
husband. Didn't pan out, no. The ex-husband, I think he found her too high maintenance to cope with and turned to drink, and they had a falling out. It was a very brief marriage, 10 months, but, well, you never know. Maybe they still love each other, maybe.
That's what people have got to go along and find out.
Absolutely.
Let's bring the others in. Just introduce yourselves and tell us which characters you're playing. Emma, let's start with you.
Oh, yes, I'm Emma Feeney. I'm playing Liz Imbrie, the photographer and the right-hand woman to Mike Connor, who's the journalist. We turn up to the Lord household, and it's kind of a... It's kind of levels of who knows what. So we turn up, we're doing this story about Tracy and her wedding, but there's sort of other stories going on in the background. So no, it's a lot of ambiguity in terms of whose agenda, you know, who's doing what and who knows what. And it's the audience will know exactly what's going on, but it's like the comedy that is created from the different levels of who knows what, basically.
Would you describe it, not exactly as a farce, because I don't think sort of farce was around in those days, but is it sort of farcical in its structure at all?
I wouldn't say it's a farce in the sort of classic sense, but it's kind of been deemed as a comedy of manners. It's the comedy comes out of the lightning dialogue between the characters, and I just think that you could say that the plot as a whole was a bit farcical in terms of the ex-husband turning up and what happens in amongst the characters. But I wouldn't say it was a farce, as in people running in and out and closing doors and things like that. But the comedy is definitely in the dialogue. It's still hilarious, and like Amy said, it's still relevant because there are some references to Philadelphia, but for the most part, it's just classic dialogue that people will still find funny. So.
Any other of Tracy's men here this morning?
No, they've abandoned me.
Well, there's maybe a clue there.
Ex-husband and husband-to-be haven't turned up.
This is kind of like an extra bit to the play almost, isn't it? It's kind of like the next episode, if you like.
Yeah, so who else have we got here? Bill, what's your role in this?
I'm playing Uncle Willie, who is one of life's eccentrics. Has an eye for the girls, young and old, I'd imagine, and he gets caught up in
typecasting yet again.
Yeah. Always, Alan, always.
I think he gets caught up in one or two of the family shenanigans, which add to the humour. In fact, there's some very funny scenes in which he's involved in. So it's quite a nice change to play a part like this, and let your hair down. If I had to.
What? And Julie.
Yes.
What's your part in the whole thing?
Hiya, yeah, I'm playing Margaret Lord, which is Amy's mum. So, really, you know, she's having this second marriage, but I really did like her first husband, and although she's getting married again, I quite like the new guy, but the first one's my favourite.
Great. And finally, Darren.
Paul, sorry. That's okay. I play Thomas De Sanchez Rodriguez, who is...
Oh, my goodness! Do not listen to him. He has a backstory that he's Mexican. This is not true.
This is all true.
Just for the record, this is
all
not true.
I play the butler. It is a tiny part, I must admit. It is a tiny part.
It's very, very
intricate. A lot of us actors, you know, do believe in giving us characters backstories. So I know exactly where Thomas Rodriguez has come from, and I'm doing it all with eyebrow acting in the background.
To be fair, Paul was originally cast in Justin's role. I was very much looking forward to kissing Paul.
Aww.
He was, he was going to be my opposite.
So where did the train come
still
from?
Time. Still time.
There was a few circumstances. We weren't too sure if Paul was going to be able to do the production. So fortunately, I'm so happy that he's still involved. But the smaller part just worked out better.
Yeah, I didn't think I could commit to the bigger part of things happening. But I wanted to be a part of it, so I said no. I like the Mexican character.
Look, I think we better take a break there. We'll come back in a moment and find out some more.
Phoenix FM.
It's not actually at your normal venue, is it? You normally perform at the Cranthorn Theatre, which is a nice, cosy theatre in the centre of Chelmsford. Good parking facilities and all sorts of things. But you moved elsewhere this time. Who wants to explain where and why?
We are going back to Ingatestone Hall. We performed Dracula there. Fabulous setting over Halloween. Had an absolute ball. It's such an amazing place. And we could have gone back to the Cranthorn for this, but seeing as she lives in this stately home and she's very, very upper class, we thought, no, we need to go back, definitely.
And
we're quite excited about making it light and airy and very wedding-y as opposed to very dark and scary as it was before.
Emma, you're new to Early Doors, is that right?
I am, yes.
How did you get involved?
I've been doing a lot of amateur theatre for years, and I'd always heard about the group, and I've got a lot of mutual friends like Paul here. I've been in a lot of other productions with other groups I just heard about you guys and then started to come along to actually see the plays, and then I met Amy and Justin in the bar at Cranthorn, and
she wore everybody down.
I basically wore them down and said,
yes.
Please cast me in one of your productions, please.
And that's not true. We'd seen Emma in a couple of things and we knew we wanted to use her. She's absolutely fabulous, and when this role came along, it was like, this is the woman we want, and she's fantastic.
Brilliant. Oh, thanks. I'll pay you later.
going back to the story itself, Justin, would you say it sort of reflects the mores, the social and sort of cultural mores, I don't know if that's the right word, but the way that the American society was in the 1930s in a particular way?
I wouldn't really know, Emma.
That's an Emma question. It's always an Emma question.
Well, it's a fan because it's Philip Barry, wasn't it?
That's right.
Yes, yeah. A lot of people think that it's kind of a sort of an elitist play in terms of that it's digging at the elite of Philadelphia. But actually, what he's doing, and it's not just, I don't think it's not just 1930 society, but I think it's just why this play is so timeless, is it's kind of relevant to all sort of class structures at any time, is that he wasn't digging at a particular class, like the upper class or the working class. He was actually digging at everyone and saying that don't judge. So it's this sort of subtleties within the play, but overall it's kind of, you will be happier if you don't judge your fellow man, whoever he may be. So, and it also, as well as being a love story, which kind of ties in really, because you can't sort of love with judgment. So.
And it's a bit of a suspense as well, that you don't really know what's going to happen till the end, which I suppose is pretty obvious with any play, really, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and it's definitely an example of how complicated love is, no matter what situation or how much money you have. It's always going to be... It's never going to be easy.
And I was saying that it actually revived the Hollywood career of one of the icons, one of the legends of Hollywood, Amy. Your character was played by... I was going to say Audrey Hepburn.
No, Catherine.
Catherine
Hepburn.
Wonderful. They weren't actually. Were they related? Those two?
No,
they weren't.
No.
So let's not talk about Audrey. Let's talk about Catherine.
But they may have been friends. I'm sure they discussed that they had.
Because she was quite an interesting character in herself as an actor.
She was. Funnily enough, Jay always thinks that I'm a little bit like her. There was a story about a film she did, and when the costumes got collected at the end of the shoot, her trousers were missing, her own personal trousers, and she blamed the costume department, who had accidentally taken them, so refused to wear trousers until they were returned. That sounds like me.
A bit of a Jeremy Clarkson.
Absolutely,
sort of
character. Yeah. Yeah.
So is she somebody that you particularly admire, and somebody that you wanted to sort of take on, you know, one of her main characters?
She has very big shoes to fill. I can't do it. I just can't do it. She's fantastic.
So you do. You're obviously putting your own unique stamp on the character.
Well, I'm trying to do her justice. I hope she would be pleased, but... But yeah,
she succeeds brilliantly. Don't listen to her modesty. She's fantastic in the part.
She is absolutely fantastic.
Who's this going to appeal to? I mean, Emma, you've described that it's a comedy, but it has got a message about not judging people. But is it sort of got a wide appeal, this, do you think?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people that say, oh, it's an old story and it's set in an old time and no relevance to me, but I give it a chance, because if you listen to what everyone is saying, it's still relevant. So I don't think you could sort of put it in a box or say that there's a certain type of person that's going to like it. I think it's accessible for everyone, like teenagers included.
Absolutely.
Cynical teenagers included.
Yeah. I mean, the love story's there for everybody, and if you're interested in the politics of the time, there's that there for everybody. I mean, it's a great story. It really is.
And stories of love never really change, do they?
They don't.
If someone's going to say that they don't want to go to see a play that's 80 years old because they think it's too old, then what about Shakespeare? You know, Shakespeare is still very relevant, so it's... Age of a play is immaterial if the play's good enough.
And I think also, interestingly enough, when I've mentioned this play to family and friends, the first thing they say to me is, oh, High Society, which is very interesting, and it's been revived at the Old Vic this year in the West End. So it's still relevant. People still want to hear and see the story, although we won't be doing the songs, of course.
And it's about the human condition, isn't it, which really, really doesn't change. Let's look ahead to what you are going to be doing next time. Because I know Justin, you and Amy are involved with... I'm going to start this again, you know.
Yes, we do play in a rock band called Lady Grey and the Host.
Which... I was going to come at that from a completely different angle, but I've blown that now. Thank you very much. Regular listeners to Phoenix will know that. And there's a relevance to Lady Grey and the Owls to to what you're doing with Early Doors next time.
Yeah. I mean, we is it September?
Mm-hmm.
In September, we're writing our own version of Alice in Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking the characters and the basic premise of it, but we're making it a much darker play and stuff. But we're also putting some of our original songs in there. It's not going to be a musical, but we wanted...
like a theme tune.
Yeah, to have a theme tune and a few darker bits of music over the top, so we thought, we might as well write them ourselves.
Originally, they were going to be acoustic, weren't they? Justin was going to write them, I would sing them, for example. But when we approached the band with it, just in casual conversation, they were like, yeah, we want to get on board with that. So it's quite nice to actually have the two areas of our life join for a moment.
How's that work from a copyright point of view? If you're sort of rewriting your own version of
something. It's out of copyright. That's right. Why there's so many new versions of it.
Oh, I see. So you're free to do what you like.
Damon Albarn, I think, has just done... I don't know if it's an operatic or something, but he's done one that'll be out this year as well. But yeah, the same with Tim Burton, obviously, a couple of years back, they did their version of it. I think it's 150 years ago since the book come out.
Right.
So it's out of copyright, it's 150 years, so there'll probably be quite a lot of Alice in Wonderland.
It's literally just gone out of copyright, is it?
No, I think it's 100 years. It's 75 or 100 years, so it's been out of copyright for a while.
Mm. Yeah. Great. What always amazes me, just sort of thinking of that and comparing that with the Philadelphia story and looking at your back catalogue, there's no common theme to the sorts of things that you take on. There is such a variety. I mean, you mentioned Dracula. There was Train Spotting, of course, Around the World in 80 Days. The Lady Killers, by the way, your last one. That was absolutely fantastic. I really enjoyed that. How do you sort of find the inspiration for what we're going to do?
I would say the only common theme we try to stick to is having that film element. We're big.
I've often wondered, the number of times I've interviewed you guys, told me there is a
film buffs. Unfortunately, a lot of the people we work with are also. So if there's a play that has a film reference, it's always something we'll look at. But other than that, we try and keep it as varied as possible.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Absolutely.
Pink Panther. Yeah, Around the World, Dracula. Yeah.
We try and keep it.
I think a lot of them... I mean, I know Paul is the chairman of Kites, and I think Kites do the same thing where they try and have a good variation.
Yeah.
There's obviously always some drama groups who will stick to...
Like a certain ilk.
An ilk, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think probably the better groups do try and have a variation. It's interesting for the actors, it's interesting for an audience point of view.
And it's nice to keep people guessing. We want people to come to see Trainspotting, for example, and say, okay, they're obviously that cutting edge modern company and that's all they do. Well, no, actually, we can do a classic rom-com, and yes, we can do a sci-fi, and yes, we can do a horror. That's what we want to be. We want to keep people guessing.
I think it's always also a little bit about just pushing the envelope, just doing what maybe the next thing that people won't be quite expecting. Mm-hmm. What can we do? And say it might be something that's completely out there, and then you might pull it back and do something that's perhaps a bit more straightforward. Again, just keep throwing those curves.
You certainly seem to be full of surprises. Look, we need to wind things up there, but I think you've got something for us just before you.
Yeah, we've got a little snippet for you. Absolutely.
Good morning, listeners, and welcome to the Lord's House of Philadelphia.
We shall be ourselves, very much ourselves.
But, Mother, you want us to make a good impression, don't you?
It's a case of half-sisters marrying stepbrothers. No incest, though.
Tracy, promise me to behave yourself, if only for my sake.
Well, I'll do my best, Mrs. Lord, but I don't know how good that is.
Tracy Lord, the socialite whose wedding plans are simultaneously complicated by the arrival of her ex-husband, her adulterous father, and a tabloid magazine journalist.
What's alack? What's amiss?
They don't know that we know what they're here for, I hope.
They don't know about us, do they?
Look, Lord, why don't you just throw us out?
What is this?
An idiot, probably.
Home Team One, visitors nothing.
On the eve of her second marriage, which story will the reporters get?
She's a lot more than I counted on.
It seems the little cherub has seen or heard something.
A becoming modesty.
Go put on a dress. There are too many legs around here.
And who will the bride eventually walk down the aisle with?
What is this?
Can't be something like love, can it?
No, it couldn't be.
Why would it be terribly inconvenient?
Terribly.
The Philadelphia Story. Ingatestone Hall, March 25th, 26th, 27th, and 28th.
Tracy, why aren't you being married in church?
Oh, get the hell out of here.
I met a girl last night. I hate her.
You're wrong. You couldn't be wronger.
Don't miss it.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Absolutely brilliant stuff. They are always very well worth going along to see. That's Amy and Paul, Justin, Emma, Julie and Bill from Early Doors Productions talking about their performance of the Philadelphia Story, which is on the week after next, from Wednesday the 25th through until Saturday the 28th of March at Ingatestone Manor Hall. Tickets are £13. You can get them online and I'll put a link up to how you can get your tickets on the website a little bit later on, phoenixfm.com. Go to programs and it will be there under Feel Good Saturday.